3, 2, 1. So, Steve Hart.
Yes, sir. What's up?
I'm really happy to have you here, man.
Good to be had, or something like that.
Yeah, it's been a little bit lonely here at the shop lately.
Yeah, well, just me and my cat at home, so.
Yeah. So. We're finally coming to the end of the quarantine, the stay-at-home situation.
Yeah.
So now we can get together, even though here at the shop it's been very few people. You're probably number, I don't know, maybe like 9.
That's cool.
To be to the shop in the last like 3 months.
So the next time we'll make it a nice even number, then that'll work out nicely.
Yeah. So that's cool. for sure. So, so yeah, it's great to have you here.
Well, thanks.
And I know you from the jam sessions. I'm trying to think when the first time that we met is.
I think that was probably one of Bruce's sessions. I don't know if it was the Viking or the Manhattans, but I think it's probably one of Bruce's sessions.
So Bruce Oscar, yeah. Who's the DJ over at the
College DuPage. You can
see right here. Mm-hmm. 90.9 FM WDCB radio, College of DuPage. He does a jam session, at least has for many, many years. Mm-hmm. Lately it's been in Manhattan, so hopefully that'll start up again at some point.
Yeah.
Well, I hope. I heard from, you know, Paul Jackie, right?
Yeah, I know Paul.
I heard from him that everyone's doing okay.
Cool.
In the band, so I think he's a reliable source.
Well, that's his people. Those are his people, man.
Yeah.
So he knows what's happening.
Yeah. I stay in touch with him. But, so that may have been where we met for the first time. And then I remember you came to the jam session. Mm-hmm. And that was just awesome. Yeah, it was one of the earlier ones. The first one you came to, was it at the old shop or was it at the new shop?
I think I did one at the old shop I stopped in Naperville.
Cool.
Because I remember having trouble finding it.
Yeah, there was two shops, and there was really no way for me to easily lead people to the because it was the kind of the secret other location we had. I don't even want to think about how many people tried to come out to it, and then just were like, okay, there's nobody in there.
They're probably still on 88 somewhere, lost.
Yeah, for sure. But so that was, and I remember being really excited that a bass player came because it's always. Mm-hmm. Really helpful when a bass player comes. The house player usually by, I don't know, halfway through is about ready to take a break.
Trust me, I've had that experience.
Yeah. You've played a million jams. Mm-hmm. Let's start. We can get it more into your the jams that you've been part of, and which I'm sure will continue after after things kind of normalize a little bit. But let's talk a little bit about. Just kind of your history. So where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a place called Reddick, Illinois. It's a small town. It was 250 at the time. It's down to 200 now.
Oh, it's gone down.
Yeah, it's a rural area. My grandfather was a farmer. And
it's a cool name, though.
Reddick. Well, there's a lot of jokes about that I don't think I can tell in polite company.
Sure.
But
we don't want to get flagged as inappropriate.
Yeah, really. I don't want to be the guy to end the interviews. So,
sure. But, this is kid friendly here. Yeah. Family exactly. friendly.
Exactly. The Manson family, but family nonetheless. Anyway, but it's it's a small farming community. My grandfather was a farmer, and mom was a piano player, organist. So she played for the churches down there, and
this is awesome. We've never gone into this. So, so where exactly is this geographically located? Is it like just southern Illinois, or is it?
It's about where Kankakee and Dwight is.
No.
If you drive down 55, you'll see it next to Dwight after Gardner, Kankakee. I think most people know.
Oh, Kankakee, I know. Yeah.
We're about 21 miles west of Kankakee on Route 17.
Cool.
So that's basically. It used to be that they had a street, 17 would go through Reddick, and they rerouted 17 around it, which is, I think, where we lost the 50 people. But,
That's funny. It's a lot of people. Yeah, I kind of joke about that with the jam session sometimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if, like, two people leave, we've lost
major population
10%
shift.
Of our yeah, for sure. That's interesting. When I think of rural Illinois, I don't have too much experience because usually when we go on vacation, the first step is to get out of Illinois.
Yeah.
But I do actually have some experience. There are some really beautiful places in Illinois. I remember I used to run food trucks when I was between like age 24 and I guess like 29. And there was a festival that I went to once, which was probably kind of around that neck of the woods. Okay. It was kind of a hippie festival where people would bring their goods and like everyone was kind of like flower children and stuff like that. You know,
and other plants too, I'm sure.
It was really beautiful though. There was a lake and there was like a farmhouse you know, it was kind of like a big, almost like farmer's market.
Yeah.
But people were staying there and I just drove there. I didn't sell almost anything. It was a total disaster when it came to business, but it was fun to go to. And just, there are actually beautiful places in Illinois. You just got to look for.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Look for them. Absolutely.
Yeah, was it just like kind of endless farms where you were from?
A lot of corn and soybeans. As you went down there, you'd have like a big cornfield and then a house and then more cornfields and beans and stuff.
Sometimes I think it's just absolutely amazing that our state has so much difficulty getting its fiscal, you know, situation together. Mm-hmm. It's like the entire state is the most, like probably the third in the country most tillable, productive soil. Mm-hmm. We're on not only Lake Michigan, but also the Mississippi. Yeah. Like, we have everything going for us. Mm-hmm. How are we not just rolling in the dough?
Farms prices are odd. I mean, I remember this always confused me because for years I kept hearing was the highest selling agricultural product was marijuana, and it's not even legal, or wasn't even legal at the time.
Right, it is now.
So you're sitting thinking everybody has to eat, especially if you're selling marijuana, because then they really have to eat. Sure. And so you would think that like soybean.
The munchies.
Yeah. But soybean and corn, most of it that's raised out in the fields goes into, well, the corn mostly goes into animal feed.
So did you guys actually own land as a farm?
Yep.
That's awesome. Wow.
Still do. So.
You have told me about that. Yeah, yes. That you still. So what do you guys, what kind of crops do you have?
Corn.
Did you have? Yeah,
corn and soybeans pretty much.
I know next to nothing. I mean, I have a bunch of plants at home. I do have a green thumb. I definitely do. I love plants.
No,
I love.
You have that treated.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, go ahead.
it's a serious condition. Yes. Yeah. So. tell me more about the farm, man. It's actually really interesting.
That's my grandfather's house. They had this big farmhouse and barns and stuff. And the barns, they had all kinds of cool stuff. He had one of the first Caterpillar tractors that were built. He had an old Avery tractor. These things were like pre-John Deere, pre-Oliver.
They probably last forever if you take
them. Yeah, yeah. No, they still run.
Yeah.
So
are those like, is that like a diesel engine in there?
I think so. Yeah, I think I never really went into it that heavily, but I think most of the Caterpillars were always diesel. I could be wrong. I'm sure we'll be getting clicks. So I'm perfectly willing to admit I'm wrong because I usually am. So, but they had that in the barn. The old barn used to have. I don't think I was in every section of that barn. There were all kinds of rooms. At one point in time, they had horses and stuff. He raised some chickens for a while, and then for a long time we were having eggs for breakfast, and then the chickens stopped laying, and then we started having a lot of chicken.
Did you know in the city of Chicago you can have chickens?
Mm-hmm. I did know that.
In your yard. Yeah, it's like a law that it's very...
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. There's very few people take advantage of it, but it's actually a great... And I know somebody, one of my good old friends from high school, who... Mm-hmm. They had about like seven chickens in their Chicago, backyard, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you guys raise like soybeans and then?
Soybeans and corn mostly. That's predominantly what they have up here.
The corn, like that goes to fuel a lot, right?
That goes mostly to animal feed. They do the bio fuel thing. I don't know if we do that much of that. I think most of what we sell goes into animal. Of course, once we sell it, who knows what they do with it?
You know,
they could be running experiments that we don't know about that'll eventually destroy the entire planet. But who knows? Yeah, it's not our fault. We just grew the stuff.
So, we hope that not.
But I used to walk beans.
Genetically modified corn virus.
Hybrid corn is I mean, that's why they detassel it, so that they, you know, that, so that it doesn't intermingle.
I love that the corn that's like different colors, you know, like brown,
Indian
blue.
Corn. They call it. I don't know if that's a politically correct, but they used to call that Indian corn.
I think it's fine. Yeah. I don't think that would offend anybody.
I've offended people with less. Trust me.
Well, I know corn used to be really, really small, and it used to be all different, you know, types of colors, and then it would. As they grew it, and this would be all the Native Americans, as they grew it, it became larger and larger. Mm-hmm. And the yellow version that we use now, who knows where that came from? Yeah, but it's all interesting stuff. But anyways, back to music.
I feel like I'm talking to Orange Samuelson there. There's a reference.
Sure. Well, it's fun because I think this is the first time in one of these that I've actually had any portion that involves like farming.
Yeah,
which is just, you know, fun for me and new, kind of a welcome change. You know? but yeah, back to music. So your mother was an organ
piano player? Piano and organ both. Yeah,
cool. And in the house when you were growing up, did they have what kind of instruments did she play?
Well, she had a when she had died, she was using a Yamaha 6 foot grand. But I think we started off with some sort of upright piano. I forget what it was. And then she usually had a Hammond organ in the house.
Wow!
And full pedal board, the whole shtick.
So yeah. Did she play at church?
Yeah, a lot of church. She played retirement homes quite a bit around town. So that was what she did for fun.
Good deal. And then was your first instrument? Was your father? Did he play any music?
My father is musically illiterate.
So he was focused on just, you know, making the.
Well, he was a teacher before he retired.
Oh.
He used to teach business. He was one of the first people to teach computers in high school. They had all the punch cards and all that stuff.
Oh wow! So
yeah,
really.
Yeah, I mean, it's like way. He was one of the first guys to teach that stuff.
Cool.
And
punch cards makes me think of like when you.
Like the Flintstones when they check into work there and stuff?
I actually did that. I'm old enough that when I was like 13, I started working for the YMCA, and we had one of those for about 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually the last generation because I imagine they probably got rid of it, you know, right after I... Yeah. It was kind of cool. Yeah. Chink.
Yeah. Do not fold, spindle, or mutilate.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah.
So. I think so. Yeah. It's very, very cool technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's the same idea. And then, you know, you got like tape and it always progresses. Who knows where, I mean, my daughter and my son, like, who knows what they're going to be using when, we'll have a chip implanted in our brain. But. That just connects you automatically to
Well, there was a lot of people who were saying that. I mean, talking about doing that. I'm hoping I'm not around for it. So
they won't make it mandatory, but it will be. It's funny because even just having a cell phone, if you listen to like Elon Musk, he talks about it a little bit. It makes you kind of like a bit of a cyborg.
Yeah.
Because you're just constantly connected to the entire.
Yeah,
world.
Just not internalized.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're talking about putting like ports in the back of your neck and stuff like at some point in time.
And then it's like you won't have to do it, but that if you don't do it, you'll just be completely out of touch.
Well, that's just it. Yeah, the system evolves. It's like, you know.
But to me, that's actually okay. Like I was actually talking with you earlier. I've never had a Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like Twitter. The drum shop has a Twitter. I put stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a Twitter, and I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
But it just seems like, yeah, it's just a silly thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's cute and fun.
Yeah.
but sometimes it's just a big waste of time.
I have a Twitter account and I never look at it.
Yeah.
To this day.
It's probably better that way.
Yeah. I just like, you know, Facebook is stressful enough. I don't really need to go into Twitter. So
I've got the Facebook, but then I never even look at that.
Mm-hmm.
The one I put posts up every now and then, but it's just to kind of show people music stuff. Mm-hmm. Really, that's not. I'm not concerned with showing people like, you know, what I had for breakfast.
Right. I know what I had for breakfast, and that's all you need to know. For
right. Me, exactly. For sure. Yeah.
It's classified.
Yeah. Definitely. But anyway, so then how did you get into it? Well, really, what was your first instrument that you really, you know, got deep into?
I started playing piano when I was like around 5 years old. Was it that early? I suppose, yeah. I played it all the way through junior high. Actually, I was getting to the point where I was like accompanying the choir and stuff like that in high school, or junior high, not high school. Like I said, I stopped playing around high school.
Right.
But about sixth grade, in Redick, Illinois, the high school, the junior high, and the grade school are all kind of interconnected. And so the high school band director comes about sixth grade, starts recruiting people. Okay. And so I went in, and I originally wanted to play trumpet. And, of course, the band director said, no, you can't play trumpet. Your lips are too big. You're playing tuba. Because, of course, he needed a tuba player.
Sure.
So, you know, and so I'm like, okay. And as it turns out, when in high school, my mother and my grandmother, because my grandmother played piano and organ too, they also happened to be tuba players. So guess what they had in the attic? They had an old Lyon & Healy Helican.
Oh, cool.
And so that was my first
band. Some people instrument. Listening might even... Know
what the hell
that
is. Steve Hashimoto knows because he's got a friend that plays in a Civil War reenactment band.
Cool.
And from what I understand, there are different pitches. I guess there's like a soprano, tenor, alto, and bass helicans. So apparently it's an instrument unto itself, from what I understand.
I know so little about this. I'll have to put up some pictures for everyone you know, that's watching the YouTube version. Yeah, like the so you've got basic tubas. Can you like describe these instruments maybe?
The helican is similar to a sousaphone, except instead of going up and out like that, like a sousaphone, it just wraps straight around, so the bell just comes straight out.
And a sousaphone, a regular tuba is a little more compact.
Regular tuba is like what you'll see in orchestras and stuff.
Big kind of, it's almost the shape of like a pill, almost like a big pill, like it's round on the bottom. And then it's got, maybe that's not a good way to describe it.
I've just never
kind
heard
of
that
rectangular
before.
Compared to like a, Susan's kind of like a big circle, right?
Well, they're designed to be carried.
Right. So it actually goes around
it
you.
It goes around you.
That's what I mean. I'm just trying to illustrate the difference for those listening.
Yeah, and it's the same principle with the helican. It's wrapped around you.
Right.
And so the tuba is just designed, like you said, it's kind of packed. Usually the valve's either here or here.
And is the range of a sousaphone and a tuba the same?
Pretty much. I mean, I'm sure you could pull it out if you're willing to sit down and work with it. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I've got a Con 2000, 20K, 2K, is it 2K, 20K? I forget what the serial number, what the listings, model numbers are, but I have a Con sousaphone at home that I use for like the Sicilian band and stuff where I have to march. And then I have...
That's cool, man. Yeah, you should... You should talk about that. Some of the groups. I try and stay kind of chronological for your life, but yeah, talk about the band.
My whole life just takes taking turns, so really it's sort of a bad quantum physics puzzle. But
sure.
Yeah, but my double C tuba. It's a German made instrument. I bought directly from Dan Parentoni. For those of you who are tuba players, you'll know who he is. Everybody else, well, look it up. But they've got a Rudy Meinl double C with five rotary valves. I use that with City Symphony. I'll use that when I sub on the Cubs band. Most of the stuff I use the Rudy on is the concert band, the City Symphony, the Sicilian band when we do concerts. Because sometimes we'll do a concert, but when I'm marching, I use the sousaphone because it's designed for that. And then, City Symphony, Cubs Band, concerts, pretty much anything. Most of the stuff I use the double C on. I play it, and I've been playing it at Prince of Peace, United Methodist Church, Elk Grove. I play it for solos and stuff. Sousaphone's pretty much, like I said, a marching instrument. The Con sounds great, though. I've been really happy with the Con. And, of course, the Rudy I've had since 76. I mean, that's a phenomenal instrument. And so, like, when I'm doing classical, if I'm doing the Bel Canto Orchestra, City Symphony, any of this stuff, it's the Rudy. And for the concert, for the marching stuff, it's the Con.
There's a marching group that that plays all over the place. I wonder if you've ever played with them. It's like the Chicago Brass something. I can't remember. But are the do you know the drummer Nils Higden?
No, I know Nils. Yeah, I know Nils. He I did plays, an album with him.
It's like the Brass Collective or something like that.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
I can't remember what exactly they're called. I'll do a podcast with Nils someday and. Mm-hmm. And we'll get the name of that. But have you ever? It sounds like you probably haven't played with those guys.
I don't think I've played with them. There's like two different types of New Orleans brass bands. I mean, there's your traditional, like Dixieland trad bands, and then you have this newer stuff like the.
That would be this, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
I remember because I saw them play once at a beer. It was like a beer distillery opening because this is back in my food truck days. I brought my food truck and I. It was crazy. There were so many people there. I couldn't get out. I ran out of food. I was trapped. Like, so I had to just sit there with this poor girl working for me for like 3 or 4 hours just in this like melting hot truck. Mm-hmm. And then, I was like, hey, go get some beers. it wasn't too bad, but we're just sitting there with like $6,000 or $7,000 in cash, just sitting
there. That's always a good feeling.
Yeah, for sure. This huge crowd of crazy, it was fun because you can only bring so much food, once you sell out. That means it's a successful event, though.
Yeah, exactly.
I love events like that where you get some food, some music, and then just happy people. Everyone's involved. Yeah. So with the like Sicilian band, do you ever do events like that?
No, the Sicilian band, I call it a feast band. What they do is they have, prior to my doing this, I had no idea this circuit even existed. What they do is they have these large Italian feasts, the Feast of Saint so-and-so or this and so, and what they do is we go in and they usually have some sort of icon that we march behind and we play Italian marches, which are completely different from regular, like a Sousa Stiles march is a completely different thing. It's almost like, well, they call them symphonic marches or concert marches. They're actually some pretty hard stuff. There's like one that... nostalgia. It starts off from the low brass. The melody's in the low brass. Da 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 da. From the low brass, it starts from there. So you're actually playing the melody. You're not going. Eventually, you will be going 1-5, 1-5. But it's eventually. But you end up playing a lot of melodic stuff.
Do you have any like recordings of this stuff?
There is a Facebook site. Is it Sicilian Band of Chicago? Facebook.
Let me know. I'll put it in the link. It sounds interesting, man. Yeah. So, I'm surprised you haven't shared it with me before.
Well, it's a seasonal thing. I mean, during the summer.
Sure.
How I wound up in that is I had lost one of my road gigs, and so now I'm scrambling for work because I had to turn down everything else to go on the road with this guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he let me go, and so I'm like, okay. So I ran into Dan Merrigan, who asked me if I'd be interested in doing that. I'm like, well, I need to work, so... So I started playing with them. They're fun people. I mean, they're really nice people. It's kind of a fun gig. It's hard because, like I said, you're on your feet for long periods of time.
Keep you in shape.
Well, I'm in shape. Oval's a shape, right?
But sure. Anyway, I hear you on that one. I get a pretty good amount of exercise lately too. Yeah, I've been really trying to get out and walk and it's funny when they tell you you can't leave. That's when you really start to want. Wait a second! I can't do what? Mm-hmm. Now I want to. Kids are the same way too. It's like you can use reverse psychology on them.
Yeah.
Sometimes, if you're lucky, if you get it at the right time. Mm-hmm. Like my kid Arthur, he always wants to turn off all the power strips in the house.
So, he's apparently Amish.
Which that's actually kind of cool. That goes along with my fashion sense.
There you go. Just get rid of the mustache and you'd be in business.
Exactly. Who knows? Maybe he's just taking after old dad.
There you go.
That's cool. Funny. Yeah, man. Some of those farmhouses are so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I was so interested in talking about that farmhouse. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just man. Yeah. I don't know what your guys' place was like. I was actually, when we were looking at buying a house, there was a place out in, I think it was in Elburn somewhere.
Mm-hmm. I've been through Elburn.
Yeah, and it was just a house. It was really old, falling apart, but we were considering maybe buying it. Mm-hmm. It'd be a lot of work. This is before I had kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now that I have kids...
no time.
I don't think there's any way I could.
Exactly.
Yeah, you kind of, when you get to that point, you have to just pay people to do stuff for you. Although I fixed a glass door yesterday. The lock wasn't working, and I figured out it was the easiest fix ever.
Mm-hmm.
So I do fix things sometimes, but when it comes to difficult things.
Fights or anything like that, just, yeah, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Competitions, whatever, yeah.
I'm a little afraid of electricity, you know.
Well, for a while there, they were using it for execution, so you probably...
Right. Have you ever been electrocuted before?
No, I missed that.
I have. I don't know why. I've, like, three times in my life, I was, like, going back to change outlets, and I just managed to electrocute myself. I don't know, like, how, but it just happened multiple times.
I have a defibrillator, and there's, like, one time, oddly enough, this is appropriate to the store here, I was sitting in on drums on a blues jam, and all of a sudden, next thing I know, I'm standing up, the sticks occur across the stand, and everybody's staring at me, and I'm like, I freak out, so I grab another pair of sticks, start playing, and the thing goes off again. It's like, suddenly hits me. Ah, that was the defibrillator going off.
Oh, jeez.
So...
Were you okay?
I don't know if it was a heart attack or if it just didn't like my time, but still, it was like, it was a little weird.
Isn't it interesting to think about how, like, when you're playing time in music, your heart is always beating at a different pace. Mm-hmm. So your body is, like, doing two different rhythms simultaneously.
So that's my excuse every time somebody complains about me rushing. So
It's just, it's interesting to me that... that, you know, that's a thing. I wonder if your heart ever, I wonder if they've ever, like, done an experiment to see if your heart ever, it probably does. I mean, if you're playing something up tempo, your heart probably changes. And then I wonder if it ever, maybe for some people it becomes like, you know, there's like an equivalent. I wonder if you can measure it, like, you know,
for
every like 10 heartbeats, there's maybe like, you know, 13 beats of the...
I'm sure there's some
weird
like
ratio
that.
Like that.
Yeah. It's probably not something common most people want to know, but yeah, I'm sure there's something like that out there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that'd be an interesting experiment. Mm-hmm. I always see our drum videos when we do the tunings. We'll do like three different tunings on some of them, not all of them, but I always see those as kind of experiments to see how the drums record, because they're all so different. You get the vintage instruments and then the modern instruments. And just the way that, it's really incredible to see just the difference. And so often, the vintage instruments just, they sound less perfect. They're less perfectly made. There's all these little, they always have these little imperfections, like just like strange little things that make them have just a totally different character. I suppose probably tubas are like that too.
Yeah, I think everything's like that to a certain extent.
Yeah, what's your favorite instrument that you play right now?
Oh, please don't do this to me.
or your main instrument, maybe not your favorite, but
your
go-to.
a lot of people call me for string bass. I do a fair amount of electric bass. Like I said, everything kind of almost divides up a third of my stuff's on string bass, a third of my stuff's on electric bass, a third of my stuff's on tuba, because string bass works both with jazz and classical. Tuba works with, like, traditional jazz and classical. Electric bass works with, I've done jazz on electric bass.
Yeah, so, and you're a good drummer, too.
Oh, thanks. I don't get called for it that much, because there's too many guys that's their first instrument. But,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's just, especially compared to, like, bass, there's not a ton of... But even tuba, I mean, I don't think there are a lot of gigs for tuba, but I think there are even less players.
Yeah, well, that works. I know the Cubs band, that's Rich Armandi's gig, but Rich can't make it. Like, when he's teaching over at the Ebersole Clinics, so he'll call me to come in.
What does the Cubs band do? I mean, I guess I've seen them before, but do they just play before the games?
That's what they do now. What they used to do back in the day was they'd have us actually, we'd play out front for about an hour. Back in the day. Now, basically, we play an hour five out front, and then we're done, which is preferable to what we were doing, because what we did was an hour in front. We do a half hour in front of the Willie Mays statue and a half hour, not Willie Mays, Ernie Banks. Willie Mays, dear Lord, what city am I in?
And, I know the statue you're talking about. Yeah.
And then there's another statue we played behind in front of for a half an hour, and then we go in and we'd stroll the stadium from to the bottom of the sixth inning.
Yeah, cool.
And we'd sit down, and then when they change teams, we play a tune, and then we sit down, and then they change teams, and we play a tune, and we do that. And then one tune, they'd set up microphones and broadcast us through the stadium. And then when we get, but that's dragging a tuba through a crowd of people. I had one putz. throw a peanut down my horn and I had to remind myself that murder is still illegal in Illinois, so I moved on with my life.
That's rough, man. you get so many crazed fans in one place.
Yeah.
And Cubs fans are pretty intense people.
And they don't even have to win. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
I like baseball. Mm-hmm. I've never been a huge sports guy in general. Mm-hmm. I actually really like tennis. That's probably my favorite sport to play. Mm-hmm. And basketball. Those are probably my two favorite. I met Frank Thomas, who's a White Sox guy, mm-hmm. when I was really young. So I've always kind of been a little bit more of a White Sox guy myself. Yeah. But the Cubs, it is cool that they still have Wrigley. I mean, that stadium has just been there for so long. And it's just such a iconic part of Chicago. Yeah. What about the clubs around there? Cubby Bear?
Cubby Bear. I've played in Cubby Bear a couple times.
You remember, like, they used to have dueling pianos?
Yeah, I think actually Mick Archer may have had something to do with some of that.
The Cubby Bear is the one right on the corner, right?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah,
it is. But then if you go a little further south, there was a place where... I used to play it. There used to be a place that was like Goose Island.
Mm-hmm.
But then they tore that down, and now it's like condos.
Yeah, well, that's the way everything is right now, is condos. Right.
More condos.
Yeah.
More condos and McDonald's, Chipotle. These days, not even McDonald's anymore. Yeah, it's just all the new trendy...
all the hip stuff.
Fast casual, that's what they call it. It's like... Fast food, mm-hmm. casual, but quality.
Yeah.
But it still has like a lot of salt in it. It's not. It tastes mm-hmm. really good, but it's not really very good for you.
Yeah. Well, that's your first clue. Where's it tasted good? Yeah. It's like, but I'm not sure. I didn't do a lot of that circuit there. That was a lot of the cover bands and stuff did that, which I haven't done in ages. That was back in the 80s when I was in Joliet. I did a lot of that.
Yeah, let's go back to the whole chronological thing for your life. So if we go back to, I mean, yeah, how'd you move on? Did you do the college thing?
Well, I went from sixth grade in Greddick, Illinois to Pontiac Township High School because the Greddick had no college prep. I would either have to take shop or ag. You know, and which actually now in hindsight might not have been a bad idea, but so I went to high school in Pontiac and started playing a lot of tuba. I was the first chair there pretty much the whole time I was there. We had an ongoing competition between me and the first chair trumpet player. They had always in the auditions they had a speed etude, you know, you're supposed to play it as fast as you could. And the first chair trumpet player and I always tied for the fastest.
Yeah, so is playing things on tuba versus trumpet, is it more difficult to, you got to put more air through it.
Yeah,
tuba,
it requires
right?
more air. You actually have to know how to breathe to play the instrument.
Yeah.
When I've taken lessons, we've actually gone over breathing technique.
Right.
so it's necessary.
Flute's kind of like that too, right?
Well, the instruments that require the most air is flute and tuba.
Yeah, because my wife's a flute player, and she was saying, just kind of just guys in general, they have like bigger lungs, and so they have like a huge advantage when it comes to to playing flute.
Yeah,
it's I watch her play. Every now and then I'll get her to jam with me a little bit. I'll play some piano at our house and she'll play, and it's a lot of air needs to go through that thing to make it work.
Well, you're not playing directly into it, you're playing over it.
Right, so you probably you lose a lot of that.
Yeah.
I can get a couple notes out of it, but it's tough, man.
I never played woodwinds. I've played brass, I've played strings, I've played piano, keyboards, I've played percussion. Never played woodwinds.
I think you've got enough under your belt for now. It's you know, most people stick to like rhythm section or you know, like horns, you know, even going, you know, going across that is fairly uncommon. Everyone's played piano a little bit,
but yeah.
At least, you know. But yeah, so then you did go to college, I think, right?
I did, yeah.
Well, where did you go to
high
college?
School was basically where I learned to play tuba, and then I picked up drums because I used to come into band, was my first class, and when I get there, there was always this John McIntosh was playing a drum solo and sitting behind the drum set and playing, and all these girls were around him, and I'm like, I want to do that. Sure. So I learned that, and then the band director said, well, you play piano, so you know chords, you play tuba, so you read bass clef, you play drums, so you have a sense of time, gave me a Mel Bay book, and the school's electric bass.
Oh, and so that's what started you on bass.
Yeah, so here I am. Then I started picking up upright bass in college.
And oh, cool. So what was your degree in college?
I have a bachelor's degree in tuba performance.
So, okay, you went there as...
As a tuba. I went there originally as in education, but I made the mistake in my sophomore year, they gave us this survey, and I said, well, I kind of wanted to have the education degree as a backup in case playing doesn't work out. Well, this ticked off the head of the education position. No, if you're going to education, you have to want to teach. And so I ended up in the performance thing, which qualifies me to deliver pizzas, basically. But nonetheless.
Yeah, you were talking about that earlier. Yeah. So yeah, then, I mean, I've got a degree in performance, and I mean, yeah, I definitely learned a lot of wonderful things. Mm-hmm. I went to Roosevelt. I met my wife there, and yeah, it definitely kind of expanded my, you know, my mind on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, when it comes down to a real practical degree for finding a good day job right mm-hmm. after you exit out of school, it's. It's definitely not the if you're going to go to school for music, you got to have like a real specific plan.
Yeah.
And then that or have a little bit of money stored up mm-hmm. that you can live off of for a while mm-hmm. while you figure things out. Yeah, there are jobs out there. I think there always will be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I was talking to one of my friends and he said that the people who stick with it, once you get out of school, you're not going to get much. Mm-hmm. And if you stick with it, you know, 5 years down the road, then 10 years down the road, every half decade, more people drop out and you grab a gig there, grab a gig there. Yeah. And so eventually you'll piece something together. Mm-hmm. But so after college, then when did you move to Chicago?
Well,
or at least the area.
I was always in Illinois. I moved to Joliet in the 80s because I picked up this Top 40. This is where we're getting to the cover band thing. I picked up this Top 40 gig, and I found a one-bedroom apartment for $180. And
this is like 80.
Well, 81, 82. My first professional gig was out after college was at Marriott's Great America back when they had. Well, no, I take that back. My first professional gig, I was 16 years old and played drums in a country band. And then I got a gig at Great America where I did a country music show, The Harriman, because I played string and electric bass.
Oh, nice.
So in the middle of the show, we did a big bluegrass thing. And then we go back and play electric bass for the rest of the show. But I read music and I could play the stuff and I could play upright and electric. So I picked up the gig.
Nice.
And there's all kinds of horror stories from that we will not go into tonight. But
sure.
Then then after that, I went back home, worked at a Dairy Queen for a while, and I did a semester at Olivet because I didn't get enough credits to completely graduate from Wesleyan. And so I did like a semester at Olivet Nazarene, which is a whole nother world in itself. I did play string bass with the orchestra, and I embarrassed one of their regular bass players there, which was probably a bad idea, but I'll probably be cursed now. But then when I went to Joliet, I picked up this Top 40 gig, and we were doing what was essentially the steakhouse circuit back then. All the older guys would go in and pick up younger women, that sort of thing, and I get paid to play bass for it. So, and I did that for a while. Worked with a raw power trio, Coke Lachey, for a while.
So do you have like any recordings that that we can check out, like anything you got on CD, something like that?
Yeah, well, I've got people. I'm on the most recent thing I did a CD for Liz Mandeville.
Okay.
She put out a CD called Playing with Fire, and I'm on a bunch of tracks on that.
All right.
Some electric bass, string bass. There's actually a tuba track.
People like buy it somewhere online?
You can buy it from Liz. I think you can get it from Amazon and.
Okay, yeah. Before we put it up, I'll try and find a link from you.
I think she posted
up there.
I'm trying to remember. She's still under. I don't think she's still under Supernatural Recordings anymore. I'll have to check with her. But I did that album for her. I did an album.
That's like jazz?
No, that's R&B. That's blues and R&B.
Oh, I think you told me about this. Yeah, because yeah. I'm not familiar with the group. But
well, there was actually one night I came here because I did a festival for her in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's where I remember it from.
Shut up from Griffith, Indiana. Says, well, I don't have anything else to do. I made my money. I'll go harass Steve. So you know,
it was a fun day. Do you remember who was the house band that day?
I don't remember. I probably didn't know half the guys.
Yeah,
you know, they're all young kids, and I'm you know.
Sure.
But I did that. I did a recording for Molly Rose. I'm on most. There's one track I'm not on that. But I did a recording for Molly Rose called. I'm sorry, Molly. I can't remember the name. Hidden Talents.
Nice.
And then I did a bunch of stuff for this Australian blues rock guitar, Michael Charles.
You're really like versatile musician. That's one of the really awesome things about you. You at the jam sessions you do like vocal stuff too, which is like really awesome, like kind of like it's like Chicago blues style, like that's kind of how I would describe it. I don't know,
sooner or later you want everybody to go home, so that's when you know.
I think you're fantastic. I think I've thrown up at least one of you singing on there somewhere.
The operative term, they're being thrown up, right?
No, it's good, man. Yeah, it's fantastic. Cool. You got the vibe and the energy. It's I love it. I mean, like blues is an incredible form of music, you know?
Yeah.
Blues and jazz, and when it comes to Chicago blues in particular, I think I've got like I really like it. I guess of all the different styles of blues, that would be probably my favorite.
Yeah.
But what do you think kind of differentiates Chicago blues from other forms of blues?
Again, somebody's probably going to correct me on this, but I believe the Chicago blues thing is when they first started using electric instruments.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like a little more like energy and maybe like some more forward momentum. Volume. Right on, man. Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. So we'll find out later that we're wrong, but hey, why not?
I'm
so,
sure. Yeah, I'm not like a blues scholar, you know, but not at all. But I definitely appreciate the music.
Well, the Michael Charles thing is like I did three tracks on Keep Walking, which involved fretless electric, and I did most of the tracks on My Shadow. I did an album with him called Connected, which involved a rapper. So it was actually kind of a blues hip hop crossover, and then I did a series of singles for him called Under the Covers. So that's all the stuff I did with him, and then through him I did a thing with this guy John Michaels, who was more of a rock pop player, and his album was Legend in His Own Mind. I remember that because he changed it from he had all CDs printed out and stuff, and then pulled the whole thing back in and changed the title of the CD and put it out.
Yeah.
So, but I did that album, and who
You're
else?
Keeping busy.
Trying to. Suzanne Pasquale and her husband Bill, I did an album with them called Girl Talk. And so.
Do you have anything lined up now that the.
It's a couple.
You know, the complete shutdown of the whole world is coming to an end.
Well,
they can't shut it down forever, you know.
We're hoping that Hunters will revive the jam sessions.
Yeah. I definitely wanted to talk about that because I went there once, right?
Yeah, you came by. It was cool.
It was fun. Yeah, talk a little bit about that one. I'm sorry I haven't been able to make it more.
Mm-hmm.
Having two kids is...
No, that's cool.
Partially responsible for that,
we're usually not hurting for drummers.
And there's also that. I think the night that I went, there were probably the only one that I've gone that had more drummers was Ukrainian Village. I think.
Serbian Village.
Yeah. Some Eastern European country. Yeah.
that's a great jam session. I go there all the time. That's Tommy's jam session, Tommy Muellner's session.
Yeah, and he's fantastic, and everyone there is just great. Mm-hmm. The only problem is I think there were like 13 drummers when I went there. I got there early. I got there like an hour before they started. I waited 3.5 hours. I got to play one song, and it was Road 66. Blues on drums, you know, it's like okay, you know, it's fun, but yeah, it was just too many drummers, you know, the 13 people, it's just too many.
There was one night I was there, I ended up playing drums because there was nobody.
I wish I would have been there that night.
That would have been good, but a lot of people do. You know,
yeah.
You know how they talk about a flock of seagulls, a herd of cattle, a murder of crows. I've determined, because they're all sitting at the bar, so it's basically a bar of drummers.
Yeah.
So, but
I wonder when they do their like first session, I wonder if there's going to be just like a ton of people there.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, everybody's wants to get out and play again. I've been home and practicing. I'm like, this is cool, but I got to play with
it's possible human. There might be like very few people there. I don't know how many drummers are like germaphobe, kind of really afraid of, you know, exposing themselves, because it is a small room, you know. I don't think what are they going to wear masks while they play?
I had people telling me to wear a mask before the coronavirus, but that's another story entirely.
Cover up that mug.
Yeah, pretty much. You know. But no, I think there's a lot of guys. It's funny because the night that they shut, and this isn't, so far we haven't even talked about hunters yet, but the last night before when they shut everything down, I was at Doug Lawley's session in Oak Park. Dear Lord, what is the name of the place? I'm drawing a blank. Doug's going to slap me later, as well he should, but it was like...
Yeah, I'm not familiar. I've hung out there a lot, but I'm not sure where that is. Yeah,
but I went in, and it was funny because it was one of the rare nights that it was me and Rich Armandi came in, and Patrick Mulcaney.
Oh, yeah, I know Patrick, yeah.
Was the house bass player that night. I've done that gig. Doug's been rotating bass players.
Cool, yeah.
And Rich and I have both done it.
Patrick's a great player, yeah. I went to college with him. So I ran into him a while back at this gig with is at this church. But anyways, yeah, continue. Yeah,
it was the night that they shut everything down, and again there were no drummers for some odd reason. So I did a couple tunes on drums for John Scoville's the Haas drummer, and
I know him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that was the night they shut everything down. That we found out, and so we all went home and like, well, that's it.
Oh, so did you get to play?
We played. We played.
Oh, nice.
They shut it down like at midnight or something like that. So we still the thing ends at 7, so we were okay.
Yeah.
But no, the Hunter's Jam session, that's the last we were doing, it was 8:30 to 11:30.
Cool.
And now
definitely worth checking out. What's the address?
It's like a block west of Harlem, and is it 7232 West Diversey?
And what city is it?
In Elmwood Park.
Elmwood Park, cool.
It's just west of Harlem Avenue and Diversey. So if you come down Harlem Avenue, go west, and there'll be like a block.
There's a lot of good players there. The guy who's the drummer, what's his name? He comes in every now and then, although I haven't seen him in forever. I forgot his name.
Not the house drummer?
The house drummer, yeah.
George Aparo.
Yeah.
George is a former Commonwealth Edison employee. And in fact, it was funny because after my heart surgery.
How long has he been doing it?
We've been there for about 5 years.
Yeah, then he's definitely the guy. Yeah. He wears a tie a lot, I think, right?
Is that the right guy? I've seen him come in shorts and T-shirt.
Maybe I'm thinking of a different dude. Because, well, it might just be whenever he comes to the shop, because a lot of the times when he ends up out in the suburbs...
He's playing a gig.
He's playing, like, some kind of thing. He always had a lot of really cool, drum ties. Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably the same guy, though.
George, it was originally started out with George Baparo, Bob Baglione, and myself.
Nice.
And then Bob moved on, and then we had Tommy Muir, and now we're just rotating the piano players.
Cool.
So hopefully that'll come back. Right now they're open from 4 to 10, so hopefully they'll get start to bring us back there.
Yeah. If they start doing it, let me know and I'll come out and sit in.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, the jam here, we're not quite sure what the future of it is. Like I said, we'll probably still do it, but maybe like I might go like once every 3 months, something like that. We still want to do it, but it's just it's a lot of work to set it up, you know.
Yeah.
and like we were talking about, it's not in a club or anything, and a lot of the times.
Well, it's also on a Saturday night too, which used to be a big work night.
That's like the only night that I can do it myself, because or at least it was before the because the way that my family schedule works. But it's funny because actually now that's different, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it's what it, and yeah, we get a lot of people who come out who are, they're not like people who are gigging musicians.
Right.
They're people who just love to play.
Yeah.
We do have our wonderful regulars though.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and then Dave.
Yeah.
Good guys.
Dave the full Monty.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing well. I talked to him about maybe like 2 weeks ago. Just called him to say hey.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that's. I think we covered pretty much everything. Cool. The a little bit of your history, you know, like how you managed to get into so many different facets of music.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely, yeah. Steve Hart, worth checking out online. We'll put a couple links.
Sure.
But probably in person would be the best way to see some of these things. The jam session Wednesdays
from 8:30 to 11:30 when they get started up. Right now they're open 10 to 4. I also been doing a Friday night thing at the Reservoir, with a gypsy jazz thing with
cool
La Pomp.
Yeah. By the time this goes out, hopefully all these things will still be going.
Yeah.
And you can always just call the establishments to, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's good stuff. But yeah. Yeah, Steve, if there's anything else you wanna go into, let me know. But
sure. if I think of anything of any real importance.
Sure.
I mean, it's like I said, I've just been through just about everything. I've done cruise ships, I've done all kinds of stuff. The cruise ship story is best left for another time.
Right so. On. Cruise ships. I've I don't think I've ever been on a cruise ship.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, going on a cruise ship seems really bad. Because that's where the disease
is just recycled air.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's true. Like, a lot of, like, people who are, like, getting older, they got the extra money. They go out to, and then you get, like, you know, what, like, 1,000, 2,000 of them all on one ship, all recycling the air.
Yeah.
Not necessarily
not good.
The best idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that's where we first heard of it. Yeah, it was so funny because it was almost surreal because it's almost like it's in a movie. You know, you hear like it's like, but I don't know. Yeah, sometimes I feel like people have watched like too many zombie movies. You know, they're just prepared for the end of the world and. Oh, yeah, you know, we first started hearing about it on the cruise ships, and then it started to move over. But it seems like we're going to survive.
Yeah, let's hope.
Yeah,
let's hope.
If you look at the stats, I mean, it's really sad. A lot of people have died.
Yeah.
But yeah, we got to keep on going. We can't stay locked down forever.
It's just
not going to.
Yeah, after a while you just go nuts. You know, my cat's sick of me now. So,
yeah.
I'm sick of me, but that's another story entirely.
Watched every Netflix show?
I actually don't do the computer thing that much.
You don't do Netflix?
No, I just sit there in front of the TV and flip channels. I'm old school.
That's even worse. Yeah, geez.
Yeah.
At least I have Netflix to... Because there's some good stuff on Netflix. I have to say, these days, Hollywood, a lot of the stuff coming out of Hollywood...
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it so much. It's all just special effects. I like old sci-fi stuff from before it was just all explosions and that stuff like almost no one makes anymore.
Yeah.
But there is some that is done on Netflix. It's like they're much more low budget films.
Yeah.
And they're much more designed, I think, for an American audience versus like the whole world audience. Because I would say like an explosion means the same thing in every language.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't need to like dub it over and try and make it makes
sense. You don't have to put boom in the bottom, in the subtitles, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's I think part of the reason that movies nowadays. I mean, it's crazy. I don't know if you've ever. I've got my little Enterprise here, Star Trek. If you've watched like the old Star Trek movies versus the new ones,
yeah,
it's like the new one. They're going to give you like a seizure. If you want, it's like there's so much going on. It's everyone's just running around, and there's just a billion. It's like, it seriously. And then the old ones you watch, and it's like, you know, seven characters. I think it's about the right how many main characters, maybe you know, seven between 7 and 10 characters, building a plot.
Yeah,
that you care. These are characters you care about. Mm-hmm. You've gotten to know, building a plot, acting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. I don't know if you're a big sci-fi guy.
No, actually, I like the old series probably the best of the lot. Really, to tell you the truth.
It's very very cool. Like the original series you're talking about, like the old TV.
Yeah, Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock.
It's good stuff.
Yeah,
it's good stuff. It's really really enjoyable to watch it. The effects for this generation, people would probably get bored watching it. But just give it a little bit of time. Give it maybe like 3 or 4 episodes.
Yeah,
and then eventually. You'll really get into it. Because, yeah, I mean, and then people say, like, Shatner, he's a theatrical actor.
Yeah.
He grew up in the actual theater, and you can tell that, by the way, kind of the screen, he overdoes things a little bit. But if you get a little used to it, you can actually really start to enjoy it. And I think overall, he actually is a good actor. I would argue.
I'm a big Dr. McCoy fan. That was always my favorite character.
Well, I think everyone loves him. Yeah. He's in some westerns.
Yeah, I've seen him,
which were really good.
Yeah, I've seen. I think was it Wanted Dead or Alive? I think I saw him not too long ago.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
And, yeah.
Trying to think of the other. I mean, you got Leonard Nimoy. He's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he smoked like 2 packs of cigarettes a day. He was like a big chain smoker, which I think has
part of that
to do with that. He's got a very low voice.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a big chain smoker apparently.
Okay.
Which was there's a lot of cool videos about that old stuff. You gotta love it.
Yeah. Well, before I head out, let me run down a few folks that I work with. I know I usually do the fourth Sunday of the month, the Buddy Guys, for the 5-8 jazz party with Lynn Hilton. Hopefully we're going to do some recording this year.
All right.
And Justyna Biala I've been working with, Polish singer, does a lot of traditional Polish music and jazz and funk and stuff.
Cool, man.
I haven't worked with Liz for a bit, but I'm sure I'll be doing some gigs with her again soon. Of course, the Wednesday, the La Pompe with the Gypsy thing on Fridays, and Wednesdays with George. And so those are the main folks I'm working with these days. So come by and say,
nice,
I heard you on the blog, and, you know.
But, give it, yeah. But by the time I put this out, it'll probably be like 2 weeks from now, something like that.
Then 2 weeks from now, we might have gigs.
Yeah, yeah. that's in, I think, yeah, yeah. Because I think it was, June 10th, right?
Yeah, in Chicago. I think Page is actually opening up now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah,
so. And it's a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, get outside, get some sun.
Yeah,
enjoy life. You know,
and just don't breathe on each other. You'll be fine.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, don't don't unnecessarily.
Exactly.
Yeah, but enjoy life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyways, yeah, cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice talking with you, Steve.
It's fun, man.
Thanks again for coming down.
Hopefully this won't kill your business.
So no. People will love it, man.
Cool.
We're just something for people to listen to. Mm-hmm. And it'll be cool. I'll put tuba on there because there's probably not a lot of things for people to listen to that are, you know, tuba players.
Tuba related. it's out there, but it's cool.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Steve. Cool. Well, until next time.
Sounds good. Thanks, man.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll see you next time.